Hello and welcome back to the Handstand Cast with me, Emmett Lewis, my glorious co-host, Mikael Christiansen, and continuing our trend of, let's call it fangirlism about things from Japan that are actually American, we are joined this week by a very special guest in the name of, I don't know, we were going to play a guest 20 questions last time, but then that kind of failed because you can't actually ask the host questions, or no one listening can. So special guest, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. So my name is Andy Fawcett, and I am one of the founders of GMB Fitness, along with Ryan Hurst, who was here a little while ago. And we help people move better and, not get suckered into thinking that they have to destroy themselves constantly to be in shape and stuff.
Yeah, cool. I was having to think just before the cast on this. It's like, okay, so there's also Jarlo, who is one of the other people who haven't had on the cast, yes. So we basically like have, you know, a peanut butter and jam sandwich going, but like, are you the bread, the peanut butter, or the jam? Or the jelly for you Americans?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd probably be the bread because I let most of the flavor come from Ryan and Jarlo with the content and stuff, and I'm just trying to sort of wrangle this all together into a comprehensive sandwich, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You're the sandwich maker.
He's the sandwich maker. Maybe. Who serves the sandwich? We could get deep and assign a sandwich roll to everyone in GMB.
Just a little historical data. Before GMB, long before GMB, about a year and a half before GMB, Ryan and I did our very first online fitness program, and it was called The Sandwich Course.
What?
I don't know why.
I don't know about this.
But this was like 2009, so like anything goes, right? Like the internet was young, you could get away with just about anything at that point. But that's like the great granddaddy of GMB right there.
Oh my God, that is a factoid I didn't know. Is this course still available? Or do I have to go on to like...
It is very fortunately not available anymore.
Should do like a vintage kind of like return of it.
That would be funny. I am kind of like a digital hoarder. I do keep all the videos from everything we've ever done from way, way back. I have compromising photos of people from all kinds of seminars and events and things. It's kind of a weird obsession, but like I figure, you know, if it ever comes down to it, I've got blackmail material for just about everyone in the fitness industry by this point.
Good. Andy's going to go nuclear. I wish we had a Jamie on the podcast, like in Joe Rogan. He could be like, here, torrent that quickly for us and we'll play it and get us to review it. But it's kind of, you know, it's one
it
of these
fun.
Things. We've always, you know, for me, I've always kind of had this, you know, as I say, fangirlism for you guys. But it is kind of, it's an interesting journey because we talked a bit about Ryan. But I got to say it again for all those people who weren't paying attention last time. So GMB, the very first introduction to GMB was Gold Medal Bodies, where they released a gymnastic strength program. You know, it was like a one-page website of like, here, I think you started with rings or something like that. It was like, here's a rings program. And that rustled some jimmies with a few people on the internet because they were the only people who could do rings programs at the time, but they didn't have a rings program, but it was coming.
Sure.
It was coming, and how dare someone else go first. But it was kind of interesting just to watch these kind of early day fitness companies or even just internet companies, like one page site, because let's face it, that's all you could afford on hosting back then was like one page, and hosting wasn't easy. So everyone had like a one page site, and to go from like where you guys are now, which I'd say, you know, one of the biggest fitness companies on the internet, though I'd almost hesitant to lump you in with fitness in some ways. And then to, yeah, going from that of like, oh, so many people didn't make it, but you guys did, which is, you know, a testament, I suppose, to personalities as well as business acumen.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Like, I remember, so I'm actually good friends with Steve Kam, who started Nerd Fitness, and he started his website maybe about like 8 months before we launched GMB. And so we were talking about this too, like, think about, this was like 13, almost 14 years ago, and think about all of the trends that have come and gone, all of the influencers, all of the programs and companies and ideas. And, you know, I think that it's really cool to see, you know, who's been really taking care of people and who's been learning along the way versus who, you know, had a really cool idea maybe or got some attention and wasn't able to, you know, sustain that in terms of, you know, teaching people and having them get good results and taking care of them and making sure that that was, you know, actually going somewhere, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things I'd say, you know, I know your stuff. I've had a couple of courses over the years. You know, it's always been a message in your guy's stuff of like, you can do it and there's nothing really special about it if you just put in the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, you know, if we think about long-term fitness and long-term any movement capability or anything.
Anything, really.
Yeah, it's like, that's what gets people to stay. It's like, yes, you can do it. And it will take a while, but just keep practicing.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is, like, something that's, like, personally to me, like, my big thing is the growth mindset. You know, you're probably familiar with Carol Dweck did the research on growth mindset versus fixed mindset, book mindset. Some of the ideas in there were kind of taken to extremes and taken out of context. And there was a little bit of a kind of like backlash where they were debunking it. They weren't actually debunking the research. They were debunking people doing it wrong.
Yeah.
But the idea is that there's a fixed mindset, which says that whatever I can do now, whatever I have now is me. I am this.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much immutable. And then there's the growth mindset, which says, well, I'm capable of increasing my capacity at things if I work at them.
Yeah.
I think that's true for a lot of things. I mean, you guys teach a skill, which, you know, handstands are something that some people look at and say, I can't do that. But like the key word that they don't say is yet.
Yeah. Can't do that
yet. I think that that's something that's really huge is like, okay, I can't do that yet, or I can't do that now, because I haven't actually practiced and taught myself how to do it. But that doesn't mean you are incapable of it.
Yeah.
And people, especially in fitness stuff, we see other people doing things and we think, oh, well, that person's a natural athlete, or that it's easy for them, or, oh, well, they have longer limbs, or they have shorter limbs, or they have different bone structure, or they're naturally flexible, or they have better balance, or whatever, like, you know, but hey, you know, I'm 5'7". When I go to the grocery store, I have to ask for help to get the giant box of Frosted Flakes. You know, we all have limitations in life. And I think that, you know, we're too quick to have this fixed mindset about the things that we can't do and to come up with a reason that we can't do things. And so, yeah, that's why it's always been a message for us is like, yeah, if you just take your time and do the work at stuff, you might never get a split, but you can absolutely be more flexible than you are now.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You might never get a handstand, but you can absolutely develop more physical skill and control than you have right now. And yeah, that's really key to me, because I think everyone can do a little better at something if they really want to, even if they don't get to like the big goal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is one of the things that we always try to encourage is like, it's having fun along the way and just doing the thing. And it doesn't really matter where you start, because eventually you will stop at some point. Everyone stops at some point, except Mikhail. He just keeps going.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, no, I think that it's like, yeah, or like my personal belief for like, yeah, what we do in handstands and stuff is that like, if you are in possession of two arms and you are at like, at least you are determined to build a reasonable level of fitness that enables you to do a handstand. Then you can do so. Because I mean, it isn't an easy skill to attain for a lot of people, but it is also something that's like, I think like one of the things that I've always wanted to bring across is there is no reason to put the handstand on the pedestal. Like, it is not that hard of a skill, such as like, there are certain things that you're like, well, it's probably no point aiming for that because like, let's just take like an inverted cross on the rings. Like, well, you can aspire [S2] Sure. [S1] To that. And most likely you will quit your ring fun before getting there because it's just, like, you might be one of the ones that can do it and does have the perseverance to push through, but likelihood of, like, it might not be smart starting out with, like, well, the inverted cross is what I want, unless you're, like, if you're 14, well, then that's And then those are the kind of dreams you have to have. But I do think it's like, yeah, bringing that very clearly across that, like, the handstand isn't like this massive, insane thing to learn and to do, and to kind of like rather treat it as something else. It's going to take some time, but well, they're like, hard comes later, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think, like you said, like, that might not be a good skill for you to focus on. I think there's a lot of things like that. We get, like, especially people that haven't done a lot of training that are trying to, you know, get in shape. They've gotten to some age and realize that they need to be more physical, and they're trying to figure out what they should set their goals at. And I think that, like, handstands are something that's really kind of achievable for most people. And it is something that encourages you to, you know, work on your mobility, work on your strength, work on getting your weight to a place that it's reasonable and controllable, right? But there are goals like, yeah, Iron Cross might not be a great goal for somebody starting out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, I know for me, like, getting a 40-inch vertical is not a goal that's really, really feasible. Yeah. I would love to jump that high, but, you know, like,
I think it's just one not of these things. Happen, like,
without making massive compromises.
Yeah. I think it's one of these things where, like, we can have things that motivate us or inspire us. It's like, oh, I mean, you know, it's different. Like, no one looks at, like, Michael Jordan playing basketball and go, oh, I want to play basketball just like him, so I'm going to train hard. That's my goal. Like, everyone wants to. I don't even play basketball. I want to play basketball as good as him. But it's probably right. Fun to be inspired by Michael Jordan and go, like, oh, man, I'm inspired, so I'm going to go play some basketball down at the rec league and just have some fun. And that's kind of, I think, if you just put everything on a pedestal, like, this is it. And I think Mikael nailed it in the last cast we've done with Ryan. It's like, I'm not going to start jogging because I can't run as fast as Usain Bolt. What was the quote or something?
Yeah, I said something like that. Yeah. Like, it's pointless. But, like, yeah, I mean, like, you know, continuing on from what we said, then, yeah, it's just this kind of the idea of using kind of the best in the world or kind of the elite things and criteria as your own when you're just not there. You're just not even at all in the vicinity of that level, in a sense. And I think that is, like, a really important thing to, like, as a takeaway in general, that, like, it's great to be inspired by people who are incredibly good at things. And, like, along the way, you might actually be very good, or you might even be, like, competitive level good or one of the best ever. Like, you probably don't know that, but for most people, and I mean, especially the average kind of, like, either GMB or, like, handstand factory material enjoyer isn't that. Like, I mean, most of the demographic that will be interested in the things that people like us have to offer are, like, probably, like, adults or young adults even, that, like, are, like, they have other priorities in life. And to be able, like, I guess it's kind of that thing, yes, you can use the incredible skill of people that have done it for ages, like, as an inspiration, but to kind of use that as your target, or, like, as your kind of, like, the goal for how you're supposed to train. I mean, like, there's nothing more just, like, that'll cause you to like, not only give up, but ruin your body. As, like, oh yeah, I saw how this guy trained. Now that's how I'm going to train. Well, do you think it's going to work?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, like, inspiration versus comparison is a big thing. You know, comparing your performance to, I mean, we get this all the time too. You know, people like, oh, I couldn't do the move the way that Ryan did it. Should I give up? Like, well, Ryan's been training for more than 40 years at this point. So it's really not a good comparison. You're just starting out. Maybe give yourself, like, 3 to 5 more weeks before, you know, completely
3 to 5 more decades.
You know, chucking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
That kind of actually just leads me on to one thing I want to talk about with you. Was there was one of your Facebook comments somewhere, someone, like, I can't even remember, was just like, I can't remember the thing, but you kind of roasted them in the comment, but in a subtle way where you're just like,
I've been known to do that.
Yeah. They're talking about, like, the movements you were teaching, like, oh, they're stupidly basic or something like that, just implying like, why would you pay for this, whatever, something along those lines. But then you kind of said something that was a very good point and kind of ended things as like, oh, you know, we teach these movements basically like the way a kid needs a coloring book when they start learning to draw, because it teaches them skills such as like how to hold a pen, how to color within the lines, you know, all these kind of things that they can then go on and do art with. And I'm probably paraphrasing it a bit, but it's just one of those things that struck me. I was like, oh, this guy is actually much smarter than you think. Not that I didn't think you weren't smart, but it is. It was just a very
thanks, Emmett.
This is a very good like analogy where it was just like, it really made some lights go on in my head. It was just like, okay, why do we teach like, you know, I don't even think Handstand Factory was running at the time. It's like, why do we, you know, why do I teach these things? Why do I have like set geometries and set things I want people to fulfill? And it's like, because there's a lot of freedom in what we do and a lot of like all the other stuff I coach people in. It's like, oh, but I want people to do it like this, not because that's the way it should be done, but because being able to do it like that gives them the skills to do other things. I thought that was kind of, you know, the light bulb moment of like.
Yeah. I mean, the movements that we teach at GMB, I mean, this isn't it. This is our basic programs, right? I mean, we teach all kinds of stuff. We teach, you know, ring stuff, muscle ups, handstand push-ups, all these things. But like the basic stuff that we teach the most people, because most people are not at an advanced level yet.
Yeah.
So the things that we teach to the most people, a lot of it is like crawling.
Yeah.
And you think, well, it's just crawling. Well, nobody needs to get good at crawling. You're not going to like show your friends, hey, look at how good I am at crawling. Isn't this like,
have you seen Instagram recently?
It's not an aspirational goal. But, you know, it's something that when you practice it, you are developing things that you probably aren't developing otherwise. And, you know, when you said basics, yeah, it is important, because used to be you would, by the time you were an adult, you did certain, you played some sports, you did some physical activities, you had in school, you had PE that you, you know, it may have been an absolute farce, or you may have actually had a good PE coach where you actually got to experience a bunch of things. Like, but I think now the experience for most people is that you can make it to adulthood and never have learned to do anything physical with your body at all.
Yeah.
And so you do need to go back to those basics. You can't start by trying to like learn gymnastics. Well, I mean, you can, but if you go to a gymnastics studio, they're going to make you do the same things that we teach you before you start doing tumbling and stuff. So we're teaching like the stuff that everyone should have gotten a lot of practice in, but most of us didn't. And so, yeah, those basics are really important. And we're inspired by, you know, Ryan and Jarlo and I are all martial artists, and, you know, we all did basic punches, basic kicks, stances and stuff like that. And when you look at high level athletics, you know, look at like Steph Curry shooting thousands of free throws and thousands of 3-pointer shots every week still.
Yeah.
Look at like all the great tennis ones. They do hundreds and hundreds of serves every day. Like that stuff never gets too basic for them. So like, I think we don't think basic stuff is sexy, but it's absolutely like important. And anytime somebody's like, oh, that's just easy stuff. Like, yeah. And it should be easy, but for a lot of people, it's not easy to do well.
Yeah.
So then you need to practice it.
Definitely. Definitely. It's also like in one of the styles of martial arts I train, it's like we have all our basics. Our basics are incredibly simple, like much more basic than people would think. But the whole point of the basic is it's meant to be like a drill I can show you and can learn in 10, 15 minutes. But then you just have to keep doing it until your body changes in response to doing the drill. And it's not about the drill being easy. It's like, it's not about like, oh, okay, I can do that one next. It's about, no, you got to keep doing it until your body, not only like your nervous system has learned the pattern, it's like, oh, the body's actually physically changed from it to the point where the pattern is just innate. And this is what, you know, touching on is like, oh, the basic guy's throwing like thousands of like free shots in basketball. It's like, well, why? Because, you know, when he goes into a game and it's high pressure situation, it's just like, that's just what his body does.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's kind of the thing for martial arts too, is there's that, that sort of, tacit understanding that you're not going to be performing these skills when, you know, you've just had the best night of sleep ever, you're warmed up, you're in a great frame of mind, and there's no pressure. You're going to be performing these skills like by surprise a lot of times, or in a very high pressure, high risk environment. And so, you know, that's the thing with a lot of this stuff, is the difference between I can do it once versus I can't mess this up under any circumstance.
Yeah. No, it's definitely an interesting one. Yeah, back to that kind of thing of cycling back to the basics. So if we think about like where you guys started, we started out with like a ring strength program and a parallel program, if I remember right.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we have ring strength and we're teaching advanced stuff. But then obviously at some point, you could, like, this is the kind of thing. You guys could have kept going on like that and just kept going like rings and we'll just, you know, refilm the program, launch it, calisthenics, lift more weights, blah, 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 you know, down this thing of like, get a six pack, get big muscles, you know, blah. And it could have been a very successful business. But at a certain point, a certain amount of altruism kicked in with the people who were buying the program and couldn't do it, I assume. And you're like, hold on, people need something else. So we're going to give them something else. Was there a moment for that or was it just?
I mean, there were several. So we started with rings because we saw a lot of people trying to do stuff on rings and really doing it poorly and getting hurt.
Yeah.
And with, you know, Ryan having been a competitive gymnast and with Jarlo being a physical therapist, we knew that we could teach that in a way that was more progressive and safer for people. And so I think that we accomplished our goal with that. But then, yeah, absolutely. We found that, you know, people were not able to do the basics and people didn't have the strength to get started. And also they didn't have like the motor control to do some of these things too. Even people that were very strong, you know, couldn't do the skills. And so we started making a few basic things and realized that we really just needed to create something that was a preparatory kind of thing. And so we created Elements as our introductory, you know, preparatory program.
Yeah.
And it turned out that, like after a while we ended up with like actually like, you know, national champion weightlifters and stuff saying that they were using it as their mobility program on off days and stuff. But it started like that. And so we filled it out to be a lot more robust than just like a primer, but we definitely got to the point where we were seeing that people had gaps in their abilities, just like I was saying with those basic things that, you know, they should have, you know, in an ideal world, they would have been exposed to these things before, but they didn't have them. And so they were having trouble learning the movements. And so, yeah, that's where we wanted to go with that.
Yeah.
I think it's quite common with, those sort of gaps. And I can relate to that a lot, like from within like the circus field where, like, I think that is more common maybe even than outside because, like, or how to say, people are very specialized in their skills, which means that, like, let's say you can just like, let's say, handstands is one example, but like aerialists, for example, whereas like many people that come from the circus or that like a circus teacher would have in circus school, they would probably have a bunch of the basics needed. Like, of course they will have a straight arm, straight leg lift. Like, it's kind of just like you, like in a, especially in like the higher level educations and stuff, or like, that's to be taken for granted because the people that make it into the auditions and stuff, of course they can do that because they have a short time to get good. So you're going to choose the people that have the talent or like that have like the basic skills developed. But then like, what I've seen a lot is like the lack of understanding of how to develop that within someone who doesn't have it yet. Like back to that thing that like, yeah, you can't do it yet. But then there's just like a gap there of, okay, how do you develop a leg lift with straight arms and straight legs? And if you don't have any idea of like, it's funny within those communities, there's very often just like, there's like, people don't know what intensity, frequency and volume is. And there is a high dependency on technique as if like, oh yeah, you just need to feel that you do this and then that, and that makes the movement efficient. And it's like, no, don't bend your arms. That's not efficient. Like, but wait a second, person is actually bending their arms to be efficient because that is the only way the body can perform the movement. Like there is not right. enough power in, like, the body is very smart and it knows, okay, I can't pull enough with my lats in this position, so I'll make the leverage more advantageous by bending my arms. No, you're being inefficient while it's kind of backwards. And then, like, mm-hmm. that lack of knowing to, okay, how do you take someone then from there and then give them, like, basic progressions, such as, I mean, you could use, say, an invert hang and then, like, do a pike negative, etc., on straight arms, where you'd likely be able to get just basic progressive overload and coordination abilities and stuff. But, yeah, like, having, like seeing that there are very often these kind of gaps in people's understanding. I mean, we've seen that a lot with Handstand Factory, too, just, like, the realization on of how many people just don't have, like, the amount of grip power in the forearm. Mm-hmm. It just isn't there. But, like,
right.
for me, having been on my hands since I was a teenager, I never thought about this. I tried to handstand a bunch of times as a teenager and doing breakdancing. I got that grip strength. It took so many years until I understood, like, hey, shit, like, someone might just, they just don't have it. So when I tell them grip the ground with your fingers, it doesn't do anything because there is just a level mm-hmm. of force production that it can't happen. It just literally can't happen. So I find that to be, like, an interesting one, or like an interesting kind of topic in general when you're trying to convey then certain skills and to be able to recognize that, well, yeah, people don't have the same background as yourself. And what you yeah. take for granted might just not be even possible.
Just not be there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things. Like, we've seen a lot. We ran a kick-up focus group recently on Handstand Factory. And, you know, it's like focus month of training kick-up with some of the coaches and just training it out. A lot of good results, but there was a lot of people who, like, we'd give them what we'd consider basic cueing. Or it's kind of funny story. We had one big group, we've done one group like a few months ago, and we've seen that there was a big gap in people where they thought they were and what they actually needed. So we made a more preparatory group going, like, okay, a lot of people need this to actually be able to kick up. These are more basic skills, body awareness, chest to wall work. No one done that group. No one was like, oh no, that's what I need. Everyone thought they were more advanced mm-hmm. than they actually were. So then they came back to kick up and they're still doing it, but it's just like, it's this kind of, in some ways, there's a movement, there's your visual understanding of the movement or your auditory understanding. I explain something or you watch a video and you go, okay, I'm going to repeat that. And then there's your sensation, what you get from it is you doing it correctly, but then the outside right. shape of it isn't correct. And there has to be some way to build that sensory motor. Obviously, handstands has a certain aesthetic component, but it's like aesthetic alignment to get them to actually converge, where you think, like, this is the feeling, this is what the shape should feel like. Did I get it right, or what caused me to not make it? It's always kind of interesting that, like, it's such a base component that we think, but we don't actually have sometimes.
Yeah, when we had the old Parallettes course, and I mean, and it's interesting because we do in our strength course now, we do have rings and parallettes exercises and progressions in there too. Now people think that we don't do that anymore, but it's there. It's just in there. You just have to go do it. But when we had the course, it was all parallettes. Yeah. That was the move that everyone had the most trouble with, is going from a tuck to like a raising the hips up to a tuck stand, yeah. right? Like a tucked handstand on the bars. And yeah. the thing was, is they couldn't get the hip lift. Right? And we're talking strong people, people that could, you know, do sets of, you know, bench with their body weight and stuff like that. Like, they had no problem with like the arm and shoulder strength. And they were like, oh, why can't I do this? And I'm like, well, because it's not pressing. It's not pulling. It's not any of the movements you've trained before. It's this kinesthetic thing that you've never lifted the hips in this way. And you have to think of it as lifting with the hips. You can't initiate that movement from the hands up with pressing or pushing or something. So it took a lot of time for people on that. And we realized that, yeah, there's definitely a skill gap that has to be addressed at some more fundamental level, rather than just having people repeatedly run into this brick wall until they can finally get it, you know?
Yeah. No, it's definitely one of these things. So like a lot of stuff that looks simple is probably a lot harder than you think, but not because of the strength component.
Right.
It's like you guys probably deal with that with like even just on like vitamins or elements or other stuff. It's like someone does the move back to like the other one. Oh, I've tried that move. It felt good, but then I looked at the video and it looked horrible. What went wrong?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, well.
Yeah.
It's feeling good, but yeah, that's, you know, a start. But, you know, why didn't it look like that? I was like, well, actually, you know, it takes a bit of practice to get like the image to align with the sensation.
Mm-hmm.
That's something, another thing in martial arts that I think is really important is that we hit targets, right?
Yeah.
And this is something that we don't really have in like fitness exercises too often.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because I bet you guys, I've seen you teach partner drills in some of your videos and things, and you're giving kinesthetic cues to the partner, right? You're not just helping them not fall over. You're like, oh, notice this part of your body. Notice this.
Yeah.
And when we do seminars too, we'll help people and give them a little bit, feel this, notice this. Maybe try to reach just, you know, 5 centimeters further and see how that changes things. But it's hard to do that. It's hard to give someone instructions to do that on their own, which I think is kind of a weakness of training on your own compared to, you know, being in a live environment or having a coach or something.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's definitely one of those ones like, it's one of the things we set out to do with Handstand Factory is make like a pedagogy of stuff that would be trainable alone and not kind of rely, like this goes all the way from the beginner stuff all the way to advanced stuff, is like, how can we make a program that doesn't rely on having someone in the room with you? And that was the goal of everything we kind of done. So like we had to think about like, why do we do everything? What are we actually trying to teach in this exercise? What does this exercise give? Oh, it's actually training this principle. Well, there's other exercises that could do it, but this is the one we chose because it's the most accessible without anyone in the room. And hopefully, you know, the ideal fantasy is people get all the way to one arm handstand without actually having to video their handstand. But, you know, that takes a while. But video is useful, but it is that kind of idea of like, oh, can the exercises teach it? Or is there a way to make it happen through constraint or through just repetition? And that's kind of, it's a challenge of online courses, I suppose. Like, because you could just go like, here's all the advanced shit. You're not going to be able to do 80% of it, but I've got your money and that doesn't matter. Whereas can we give something that actually is a learning
experience?
But we've
added it in. And so it feels like it feels like we've added a lot of content there. So you're going to feel good about paying for it. So even though you will not be able to use it.
Yeah. It's definitely not one of those ones.
Yeah. That's another thing. So I know Ryan talked about like, you know, we have like the 5 P's when he was on your podcast last time. And like we have so one of the things, we have practice and we have play. And there's a lot of things that these try to do. But one of the many jobs that practice and play, by separating them, that we do is, you know, you practice and you're trying to do things accurately according to the instructions. But then we have this sort of play component where you sort of relax the guardrails a little bit. You relax the constraints. And you say, okay, go a little faster, go a little slower, go a little deeper, and you explore different things. And it does make space for that. I think it's hard to be prescriptive on how to play with certain moves sometimes. But if we can give people, you know, some ideas for that, it gives them a way to sort of stretch those. Because if you just give them like one form and say, it must be this way, their practice gets very reductive.
Yeah.
And when they can't make it match the form, what happens is instead of experimenting more, they experiment less, and usually that's the wrong instinct.
Yeah.
You know, because what you're doing isn't working, so doubling down on it is the wrong choice, right?
Yeah, I think it's like, it's also interesting, I mean, it's relating a bit back to handstands, but like kind of the play component is, I think it's also very important there for like a learning process of handstands, but to during that like to or to contribute with an idea that like play is an important factor for learning handstands as well, and that especially if I teach people like directly, I very often have a tendency, if I see people are very rigid and structured, I try to give them more play, and if I see that they're like way too floofy and just like to only go off of their own feeling, I give them a bit more structure. Plainly because like they contribute with different things, and though play is great, I mean, if you only floof around, you'll be getting some certain results from that, but there are others that you might lose out on. And I at least assume that when someone searches out either a coach or a program or something, that they're looking for something that they can't maybe achieve themselves without guidance of some sort. So being able to kind of have a little bit of something that helps pull people a little bit away from what they are only used to, in a sense. And I think with handstands, people are quite often like, it's quite common that people, I just like to play around my hands. I don't really need any program, but I'd like to press and I don't know how to. And it's like, oh, it's going to be hard to play yourself to that. At least for some people, while for others.
And here's the rub.
Yeah. So like to have a little bit of something that like will like at least bring you in a direction that you know, compared to just like, I'm just going to like roll the dice and then enjoy myself and maybe I do it. But again, that's enough for some, but it really individual.
Yeah, it's definitely that kind of interplay.
Right, and like if the goal is like...
Oh, sorry, go on.
Yeah, for sure.
No, sorry, go on.
You have to have both sides. You have to have structure and relaxation. And like if one thing I see a lot of is people think, oh, the goal is flow or the goal is improvisation or the goal is this. And so I'm just going to flow. And how does that work? It doesn't. Like there's no musician that has ever become a good improviser by never practicing scales.
Yeah.
That's like the only way to become a good improviser is to practice scales and modes. It's the only way. You can't do it by just messing around aimlessly. So yeah, you have to have both sides of that for sure.
Yeah. It's definitely like this 5 P's system is like, I hadn't seen it before and Ryan blew my mind with it. Then I done another cast revisiting it. Just you guys had a slideshow online talking about it a bit more, and it resonated a lot with people. I think the ponder one, like, because I got a few messages after the solo cast, which is, it's rare that I get messages after these casts. If you do, you know, plug for myself. You can message me and tell me you like the cast, by the way, guys, if you're listening. But the ponder one was the one that, like, people were like, oh, this is something I hadn't, you know, everyone probably thinks about their training, but no one actually had formalized it into their training process. That's kind of, it's an intro.
Yeah.
You know,
it's one of those things that we have some clients that buy the program. And they're like, I hate that you make me rate the thing. Like, well, I mean, it takes like 30 seconds, you know, and you might learn something from it. So just maybe stick with it for a few weeks and see if you can learn to hate it a little less. But most people, it's, you know, a bit of a revelation because like you said, they're used to doing a workout, dying in a puddle of sweat or it ending or whatever, changing clothes and like, you know, going and, you know, getting like a 2000 calorie smoothie or something.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's fine too, but I was an obsessive logger for a long time. From the time I was 12, I would write notes after every practice session. I did this for like 20 years. Sometimes it would be very short. Sometimes it would be very exhaustive. And I know Ryan and Jarlo have had different spells and where they've done a lot of, you know, kinds of journaling about things and kept notes. But what we found is that we always would learn a lot from that process. Even if we never really referred back to them, we would learn by putting that into some words, by actually, you know, taking that 1 minute to like 5 minutes and just really reflecting and thinking, what did I do well? What could I do a little bit better? What can I learn from this? You know, even just at that level, even purely subjectively, you're going to find that you notice things about your session that you carry over into the next one. Even if you don't consciously remember it, subconsciously, you're going to be noticing, oh, yeah, this is the mistake I made last time. Or, oh, this was the thing that felt really good when I was getting close to nailing it last time. I need to find more of that. I need to feel this feeling more.
Yeah.
And then I'll be on the right track. You know, you start to notice these things and it can be really subtle, but over time, the benefit of that really does start to stack up.
Yeah. So this is the kind of thing, like, for myself, who don't so much keep a training journal now, but like years ago, I would have been religious about training journal, like every set, rep, weight, movement, yep, whatever I was doing in training would just be recorded. Yeah. And like this journal, like, it was invaluable for me because, like, there's, you know, for me, strength training goes on the back burner a lot. I'm like, okay, I do strength training for a bit, and then, you know, I'm traveling a lot or other stuff. And then I go, okay, I can refer back to my journal. I go, what program got me from like a 120 squat to 150 squat? Okay, this is how I done it last time. If I repeat that process, it'll probably get the same result next time. Most of the time it does. So then I'm like, okay, cool. I just, you know, I've found true experiment. Like, you know, some of them, you have your failures as well in there. You go like, I tried this and it didn't work so well, or yeah, the other thing worked better. So, okay, I can skip that. But the ponder component was something that was missing in this. And like, you know, there's odd notes in the journals where it'll just be like, oh, you know, some form cue or something that was a mistake that was annoying me that I might scribble down, but it wasn't this formalized process. Mm. And that's kind of possibly, you know, thinking back on it, it's possibly something that has cost me a lot of training progress, but not having this where you're just like, oh, you know, we do have, like, you know, even on breakthrough moments where you begin to feel something, it's like, oh, have the weight in this hand here for this thing. And then you're like, oh, but then you forget about it. Then you remember again. I go, oh, I remember I felt that like 5 weeks ago or 10 weeks ago. Oh, why don't I just try and hunt for that? And that kind of, I think it's very important, very like possibly your magnum opus of contributions to the fitness and industry.
I hope so. I mean, yeah, like, again, structure on that makes a big difference. Structure, journaling. I used to try to journal and I never knew what to write, and it would drive me nuts and I'd give up after a few weeks. But then some people talked about some of these kind of structured journals that are out there, like the 5-minute journal or the best self journal. One of my friends started that company and later sold it. But I tried some of these and they were great. It's got a little thing like, okay, what's today's date? What's three things you're grateful for? What'll be a couple of things you could do today that would make today really fantastic? Yeah. And at the end of the day, you know, what did you do well? What would you like to do over? That kind of thing. Like, just having it say, like, tell you what to write, tell you what to think about. Yeah. And you can do that. And then you start finding stuff. You're like, oh, wow, I'm actually getting value out of this that if I had done it freeform or tried to do it freeform, I would not have. So,
yeah,
it's really beneficial. And yeah, like we do also have like sort of self-rating of things. And again, that's really subjective, but over time, practicing those subjective ratings, you can score yourself like 80%, 50%, 20%, 90%. Yeah. And there is a certain amount of precision there. Even if it's just your subjective feeling, you can start to trust those ratings more, because over enough ratings, you know that there's a pattern that, okay, this was a 90% day, which is pretty rare, but damn, it felt good. And I know that, you know, I made more progress during this session than usual.
Yeah. No, definitely. It's definitely, yeah. It's one of those things, like, it is just like, it was definitely one of those mind-opening moments when Ryan, like, laid out the kind of thing, because, you know, the 5 P's, I'm all about, like, alliterating things, M3, other stuff, like 5 W's and all these kind of things. So, like, it fits my kind of thing as well. And it's like, you know, think of extending it. You know, we could have permutations and penance in there. My session was bad. What is my penance?
Nice. So. Yeah, the first iteration was 4 P's and an R because it was reflection, but that just didn't have the right ring to it. So yeah. we had to change it to ponder.
I'm going to launch my own one, the 6 P's, ponder and penance and perdition. Yeah.
I've actually been like, I've always been on the other side, in the terms that, like, I've had a ten, or like, I'm definitely the floof around person. So like, for me to have like too much of structure on training and stuff, like, it just either I do it very rigorously for half a day and then it just like sprawls out into whatever the hell. Or I just forget about it. So, but I do use kind of, I have developed sort of habits that are maybe not in like in written form that basically achieves the same in a sense, for my own part. And like these kind of small rituals or like ways of thinking, just okay, well, now I'm going to, just think through, okay, so for example, like through today's session, it ended kind of frustrating because there was one thing that was a bit like worse than the day before. And then like, okay, I leave and I was like, yeah, but this and this worked pretty well and my energy was solid and yeah, did some stuff that was, I had a good time during today. And like, even like there was one thing that I tried today that I haven't tried in a while. And I was like, okay, it didn't go, but it was like, well, it was almost, I didn't really expect an almost of that today. Well, that's a plus one, isn't it? Like getting kind of these like habits of reminding yourself that not everything is just a chore always, and that you only have the right to feel that something was okay once you've like mastered it, I think is really, really detrimental. And we've been speaking about that also for like our kind of material and stuff with like these kind of ways of measuring like a progression or whatever, because it's very easy that you kind of, how to say, you lock up positive emotions for your practice and you only allow that when you make progress. And I think that can be a bit like unhealthy, or like, how to say, just makes things more boring than they need to be. Because when you are a beginner and when you do your first thing, you go, whoa, it worked, that was like so cool. And you're really like excited and all that. And like, need to find some way of at least keeping part of that spirit in it, even when you've done it for many years, or else like I think you just lose interest. And I think if there's anything that has kept me going with what I do for as long, I think it's that I've at least been pretty able to keep that kind of like, oh yeah, that was a bit exciting, even though it wasn't like the best thing, else I think I would have been done a long time ago.
Mikhail,
yeah, being able to recognize different kinds of wins is really big. Yeah. Especially like if you're just like looking for one more second or five more seconds or something, that's never going to give you that same sort of that same sense of satisfaction as the first time you held a steady handstand, right? Yeah. It's never going to feel the same. So you need to find something else to feel good about.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Remember a friend of mine, a guy called Craig Mallett, who is a friend of Kit Lachlan's, but he was training, like he got into, you know, he's comes from a martial arts background and he's pretty good at it. He's pretty strong anyway, but then he got into kind of naturalistic movement and other stuff. But for some reason, like the muscle up was just a real challenge for him. Like he could do chin ups for days, dips for days. It was not a strength thing. He just couldn't do it. He'd muscle up, this muscle up. When I'm able to get a muscle up, I'm going to be the man. And then he finally, on the day he got his muscle up, he said, remember, I just managed to pull myself up, struggled my shoulders through, pushed up to the dip. And then I got to the top and I was like, that was it. That's what all this thing was like. But like he was enjoying his training at the time. He was having great fun, you know, but this kind of struggle and this thing, it was like, oh, you know, this is going to feel so awesome when I could muscle up finally. And then when he got there, he was like, oh, nothing has changed.
Yeah.
It's kind of...
Right. I think so many of these things, we make it a binary, like, yes, you can do it, or no, you can't.
Yeah.
But it really is, it's that process that's, like you said, he's enjoying the training.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that really makes the difference is, you know, if you can be in the process and enjoy it and, you know, like, not to get too zen, but just be where you are. Just be there.
No, be zen.
Where you
Go
are
weird.
Doing the thing you're doing. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just, that's, I'm not great at it either. I have not mastered life or anything, but it feels like the times when things do feel like they're flowing and where things are going where they need to go, it's, you know, I'm focusing a lot less on the future, a lot less on the past, and I'm just doing the thing I'm doing, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, training wise, that's absolutely true. A lot of other things, it's generally true too. And the more you can just be in the process and just, you know, focus on the place where you're at that moment and the thing that you're doing. I find that, and from listening to our clients too, it's like, that's the thing that's satisfying a lot more than, you know, reaching the goal, because a lot of people get to the goal and are just like, oh, well, I don't know what to do now. I was having such a good time and now I have to stop and come up with another goal. And like, no, you don't, you can just keep going.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. It is these kind of binary goals that kind of like ties a bit small into auto-regulate, or what I say about auto-regulating the people. It's like, it's the art of just seeing what's on the table today, not what you think is there, yes. What is there. You just show up to your session, and then we see what's there. Not worry too much about like, oh, last week I could lift this much or that much. It's like, no, you just, you will get better. You just got to keep doing it. And that's kind of...
Right.
Yeah.
Kinda, I think the... Like, like I mentioned several times when we've talked, I don't know if you know who that is, Andy, but do you know who Rodney Mullen is? The skateboarder?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone knows Rodney Mullen.
He's like, yeah, he's my all-time favorite dude. He's the most inspiring guy to listen to. Also, since he's well into his, I mean, he's like getting towards his 60s, I think, and he's still,
yeah,
he's still rolling. Like, it's this one interview, this like rather recent one. Like, he says something that like, he talks about it and like how much like he says like how much of a pain in the ass it is to be this dedicated to it. Like, but he says like, yeah, but that's what I'm made of, and that's why I'm gonna continue until the wheels fall off, he says. And like I think like he speaks a lot about that thing of this, like, yeah, and like finding kind of like a joy for what you. Or like, it doesn't need to be joy either, because sometimes it's just gonna suck, and that's okay. But like
sometimes it will suck. Yeah.
But that you kind of still keep that kind of like that, like you're kind of invested and interested in it for all of the kind of facets of it, like what it brings you, more than just like, oh, I managed or I didn't. But I think that it's. Because it's an easy thing to say, the idea that like, oh yeah, I'm gonna just enjoy the process or like whatever. I think that like, because the achievements, of course, and like learning and all that, it matters. But I do think actually that like the enjoying the process thing is definitely something that everyone that wants to do something should be, how to say, like, because that's what you do in the beginning, like that you get into it and it's like, wow, this is so cool and stuff. And then, but I think like to actually kind of come back full circle to that point, I think takes a hell of a lot of maturing within what you do, in a sense. Like, it takes a long time. And I think that's like one of the things that's really nice about it too, because I think if you sort of don't find that thing, that's like, it's nothing bad about it. Then it was just maybe a period in your life where you did something and then you moved on and did something else that you wanted to do. But if you want it to stick around for a long time, or like if that's kind of just like that thing, then that's something that I think really kind of needs to come, like it comes like after quite a long time of having been involved, and like there's been a lot of ups and downs and it sucked a while and you quit a while and come back to it, and then you're just like, yeah, it's just you and like a few of the things you like to do, and then it kind of like the appreciation kind of grows from the inside afterwards, in the sense, okay, I achieved the things, I did that, I lost this, got here, and now what? Oh, well, yeah, it's still you show up, still it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's generally the case. I mean, it's like a lot of things. I don't think you can like develop wisdom like instantly. You can't just, I will now be wise.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to struggle with a lot of things and have the ups and downs and the setbacks, and then you learn through that and you come to a place where you're like, all right, okay, I see. I just need to do this. And that's absolutely true. I've had that with my martial arts training and with all kinds of things. I'm I've been playing guitar for like 35 years or something, and I'm not good. I've been good-ish at certain points. I'm not good now. But, you know, I go through this cycle every few years where I'll get a little more interested, get a little more serious, play a little bit, maybe even take lessons again, you know? And I've come to the place finally where, like, I'm okay with where I'm at, and I enjoy it, and I can pick it up periodically and have fun with it. But it took me a long time to not compare myself to other musicians or to not want to be able to play things that I can't play or stuff like that. And I think that, yeah, a lot of it really is just like you were saying, because is that whole cycle that you have to go through before you get to the point where you're fine to just be there and do that thing and be in the process of it can be tough.
It's definitely a tough one. It is kind of something interesting. Recently, I was reading some, I think it was a Twitter thread of all things, of some mathematician talking about the process of solving mathematical proofs or finding new things in maths when you've got a very hard problem that you always hear about mathematicians. They just wake up and they knew the solution. And you just know, you hear it like all the time, like at this flash of geniusness. And he's like, well, what's actually going on is they've basically, you've struggled with this problem so long that you've done everything wrong in it and you've failed so many times that you basically, through a process of elimination, you've come to the solution. And that's kind of what I think in training. Like, it just kind of relates to the training. It's like, oh, I've done the training. I've made all the mistakes. You know, I've gotten injured by the training. I've come back from it. I've compared myself to others and I've gotten upset, but I've come back to it. I've done all the wrong things, and now it's just the solution from my personal training, my personal practice, is just where I'm at now, and that's fine, or where I want to be, or what my aspirations are, or other stuff, versus it's just me and the training, me and the solution, you know, not something or not something else. And that's, I think, is an important maturing in any kind of physical discipline for anyone.
Yeah, we have, with the internet now, we have all the answers available.
Yeah.
And it makes things really challenging, because when we start something, the tendency is to just look for the right answer. You know, what's the best coffee maker under $200? I don't want to make a mistake. I'm going to read the reviews and buy the best one. You know, what's the best exercise to grow my chest? Clearly, I don't want to do the wrong exercise. Yeah. Right. And so we look for these right answers that are generally out there, and we try to avoid all the mistakes. But I think that kind of part of what you're saying is that you have to make the mistakes to really have a satisfying and kind of holistic experience of things.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely one of those things, like, particularly, in anything I've done, there's always just been a lot of mistakes. And I learned from them. And I could argue, oh, I'd probably be better if I didn't. But, you know, at other times, like, maybe I wouldn't still be doing these things. Like, you know, you see the same fitness. It's like the ultimate most efficient exercise. Like, there's a lot of, I can't even think of the names of the people, but there's a few people promoting, like, the world's most optimum exercises for this muscle and that muscle and blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, that's fine. But is it really? Like, you're robbing someone of the experience of, like, actually trying out all these exercises and going, like, maybe this is the most efficient exercise, but I don't like doing it. I prefer doing something less efficient because it gives me more enjoyment.
And that's the problem, is that what happens when you, if you were to say, let me take the most efficient strength exercises, the most efficient mobility exercises, the most efficient endurance exercises, for example, and I will make my routine around these things. Also, I will eat the most efficient diet.
Yeah.
And that sounds like the world's most boring routine to me, because I guarantee if you tried to do this, you will absolutely quit within probably 2 weeks.
It's like the classic guys who like, oh yeah, so right now, like, I've changed like a lot of things. I'm getting up at 6 a.m. every morning. I'm like doing like 30 minutes of meditation, then a run, and then a shower, and then I start working.
Culture.
Bullshit. You are done in 3 days. And guess what? They're done in 3 days, because like, it's unsustainable. They see that it doesn't work. Then they skip out, and then like they forget about it and try to bury the Facebook post when they wrote that they had now become so awesome.
Yeah. It's that kind of thing. Like, if you have your efficiency stack and you miss out on it one day, you lose all your efficiency gains and then you just quit.
All your gains.
Like, this is me on, you know, I've had a lot of apps over the years that kind of keep streaks, either games or meditation trackers or other stuff. And every time I've lost my streak, I've never opened the app again. I still maybe kept the practice going, but there's something soul destroying where, like, you know, I lost, say, like, I had a meditation tracker and I'd lost like a 300, 400 day streak. Not because I didn't do my practice that day, because I just didn't log it before 12 o'clock. And I lost my 300 day streak because of it. And I was just like, you know what? I just never opened the app again. I downloaded a different one. So
that's actually really common. Actually, Duolingo kind of solved this. They let you
buy your
they let
back.
You get your streak back, basically. It's kind of interesting. They kind of solved for this because they were seeing that same pattern in their data. And they're like, oh no, this is like the number one reason people, after the first 2 weeks, the number one reason people quit is when they lose a streak. So we have to come up with a way to let people not be knocked off by this. And it's clearly something that's like really deeply tied to human nature, because like the data that they had on that was just like massive millions of people.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, giving a way to kind of like keep that, to give yourself a little bit of grace period on it, I think seems to make a big difference for them. That's really interesting.
Yeah, my streak, like, you know, 300 day streak I lost. I was just like thinking, like, I'm gonna have to do this 301 day streak to get it back now. I was just like, okay, no, just yeah. Not committed.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. We have clients that tell us sometimes, oh, I've done Elements, you know. I just passed like, you know, 1,000 sessions, and like, that's amazing. And they're like, and I've done it, you know, 5 days a week, aside from that one time I was on vacation. I'm like, that's amazing. I can't do anything that consistently. The only thing I do that consistently is like, you know, breathe.
Sometimes that's even optional. You know,
sometimes I turn that off for a few minutes, you know, but I'm always impressed by it, you know, because it is something that I think most of us find very, very difficult to do. But also, when people do have success of that type, they always say, aside from that one time I was on vacation or the one time I got sick. Yeah. And so I think it's great that like they're giving themselves like, okay, I'm going on vacation or I'm sick or whatever. So it's okay to not do this. And I can still say that I'm on a roll.
Yeah.
Because I think that that's a thing that you also have to give yourself is, you know, a little bit of leeway around things, because, you know, life is life, and you can't, you know, can't pause everything just to keep your streak going or to make your stats look good in your tracker app or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what's really important, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's where you end up, like, I don't know, with food trackers. Like, I was a victim to this myself, like, back, you know, tracking everything I eat. And then it's just like, oh, yeah. You know, I wouldn't go out to restaurants with friends and other stuff just because I couldn't track it exactly. And stuff like this. And it's just like, it's just not, when the app and the tracking becomes too much. Now I'm much wiser. Now I just don't track and I go out with friends. But, you know, it is these kind of things where it's like, oh, if I put the tracking as the key thing or the key motivator, mm-hmm. then suddenly things have to fall to the wayside. Really, you know, now that, you know, let's face it, we're all kind of mature gentlemen in this chat. It's like, you have lives, you have other things to do that are arguably more important. And it's mm-hmm. like, oh, if I was to keep my streak going or to keep my morning routine going, like my morning routine now is basically like, oh, I used to kind of have, I wouldn't call it a CEO level routine or anything like that, but I'd have like a set kind of thing I do in the morning. Now my morning routine is wake up with my daughter jumping on my face and then have to go deal with her. And that's a morning routine as well. But if I was mm-hmm. to say like, okay, I have to go do these three or four things I would do in the morning and she has to go on the wayside, it's like, well, actually, no, that's not really part mm-hmm. of life, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. My morning routine is 100% about my daughter goes to elementary school and leaves at 5 minutes before 8. And everything about my morning routine is get as much sleep as possible before the time that she wakes up, and then spend as much time with her as possible.
Yeah.
And get her ready. Right. Mm. And then whatever I need to do during that time is all around her eating breakfast, doing a little studying maybe, and feeling good about her day.
Yeah.
But that's also just that my priority has changed on stuff. That's not to say that if you, you know, prioritize yourself, that that's bad or anything. That's just the way I am.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
Or different priorities, and that's perfectly fine.
I think that's great.
But,
yeah.
You know, imagine how much more successful GMB would be if you got up, had like a 5 minute cold shower, ran directly into the sun while staring at it while chugging a Heineken, and yeah.
Right. I mean, I should probably hire a productivity coach. I need to be getting up at like 4:19 every morning and journaling for 45 minutes, and I don't know how someone can. I've seen things where people are like, "Oh, I practice gratitude for 17 minutes or something." Like, where did you come up with 17 minutes? And what is?
Sounds very contrived.
Yeah, it's a lot of it seems really contrived. And so, yeah, I like the idea of just thinking of what's important to you and focusing on that as much as you can for things. And it seems to work a lot more smoothly for me.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is a good point to wrap up the cast on that last bit of wisdom. So, Andy, thank you so much for coming on the cast. It was great to have you. It was
Yes.
good to have a chat.
Yeah, it's a
It's always
pleasure.
like,
Awesome.
always kind of enjoy these
Chat.
rambling chats where we don't really talk about handstands and we just talk about, I don't know, the bigger picture to what we do.
Right.
So it's always good to get like someone from a different field who has obviously gone through similar things we have. So thank you so much. If you want to plug your programs, I'll plug them for you. I think the programs are great. You should check them out. But if people want to get your programs, which website do they go to?
GMB.io.
Yeah, we'll have a link in all
Just
the.
go there and
Yeah.
yeah.
You guys have like, I don't know, something like 200 or 300 articles on your website as well.
There's a lot there.
Yeah.
And so it can be a little overwhelming. If you're looking for something specific, what I always do personally is I just go to Google and type GMB, stretching or GMB knee pain or something,
Yeah.
whatever. And that's you usually find a lot of stuff that way.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Like I hadn't realized, I go into your website periodically, but I've only gone back on it recently to have a proper dig around. A lot of very top quality information just in those articles, just floating there to be found if you wade through them. So definitely check them out if you're listening in, because you'll probably find something good for you. Other than that, yeah, we've been the Handstand Cast. This is our outro music, and we'll see you sometime soon.
The Handstand Cast is brought to you by Handstand Factory and is produced by Motion Impulse. Thanks for tuning in. You can find a full transcript of each episode, along with the show notes and any relevant references on handstandfactory.com/podcast. Thanks to Isaac for editing and Jordan for transcriptions. Music by Daniel Horwath. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee on buymeacoffee.com or consider starting one of our Handstand Factory online programs. Links are in the show notes.